The abortion industry says a fetus is not fully human and therefore may be subject to removal from the womb and the extinguishing of its life through abortion. So writes Wallace Henley in a recent Christian Post article. And he adds, the most serious factor in this juxtaposition is that the abortionists and AI programmer are in a sense trying to play God. Does the issue of abortion and the issue of artificial intelligence, do they in any way intersect? We're going to talk about this right now with Wallace Henley, Christian author. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and this is Vocal Point. And Wallace, it's great to have you back on the program. Thanks for joining us. And I understand you used to actually be a speechwriter in the White House way, way, way back.
Well, yes, I was on the White House staff, and I contributed to speeches. I didn't write the entirety of speeches, but I did do research, and I helped prepare the president's conversations. Nixon was the president, and he was not a great conversationist, but he did love to get data and facts that he could exchange with people. And so I found myself in that position quite often.
Now, how did you get interested in the subject of AI, artificial intelligence? And I've never heard anybody ever discuss artificial intelligence in the same conversation where they're also talking about the issue and the problem of abortion.
Well, about 3 years ago, I began to get very concerned about where everything was headed with respect to artificial intelligence. And so I wrote a book entitled Who Will Rule the Coming Gods? The looming spiritual crisis of artificial intelligence. And in the process of writing that book, which was published, I think, 2 years ago, in the process of writing that book, it occurred to me that there's an even greater crisis going on because of the confusion about what is human life. This is the most important question of all. And then in the process of considering all that, I ran across a news story about an engineer for the computer industry, who said he thought he sensed sentience in one of the computers he was working on. And I thought, my stars, if the computer industry is going to declare the machine human, and if they agree with the pro-abortion movement, which many of them do, that the human fetus is not human at all, what kind of strange juxtaposition is that?
Yeah, you know what this problem is? This is the problem of dehumanization, and this is part of the whole problem of abortion. 63 million abortions legal since Roe v. Wade, and basically they've certainly been treating the unborn as if they're unhuman. And if you categorize anybody, whether it's Jews or American Indians or whatever, as subhuman, then, you know, all bets are off in terms of protecting them and their humanity.
That's exactly right. And, of course, this tendency has been around for a long, long time. About 10 years ago, I wrote a book with the great-grandson of Sir Winston Churchill called God in Churchill. And in that book, I began to awaken to the distinct contradictions between the worldview of Hitler and the very positive aspects of the worldview represented by Churchill and those who thought like him, that the human being is a human being made in the image of God, whereas Hitler based his design on the human being is less than a human being. It's not in the image of God. It's a machine. And therefore, we can set up camps and we can slaughter those that we don't like. What the trendy 20th century, 21st century doesn't understand is that this is a path that is going to lead us in some very dire circumstances as computers become increasingly dominant in the culture.
Okay, tell us more about what that engineer who, in effect, was attributing, let's say, certain aspects of humanity to out-and-out computers that are made by men, but they're not human in and of themselves.
Well, the machine began responding to some of his statements in a way that suggested to him that the machine had a sentient awareness of what he was talking about, meaning that the human being, that the machine could take the code of language and transfer it into feelings. And so this particular engineer said, I think I was talking to a seven or 8-year-old child. That's the way the machine responded to some of the questions or some of the statements that I was making. And of course, we know that these were programmed into the machine, but his concern was that spooked him. I mean, this really shocked him that the machine seemed to be processing the code of language as a human being would process that code, and therefore it was sentient. Now, I will say that when he began talking about this, the company he worked for, which I will not name, but the company that he was working for, put him on leave. They thought maybe he was going crazy, but he felt very strongly about this.
But isn't it the case that computers only do what they are programmed to do? No matter how fancy they may appear to be, they only do what some human being has programmed them to respond in this way.
That's exactly right. And that brings us to one of the most powerful proofs of the reality of God in the entire universe. Information always has to come first. It always has to come first. There are two great issues, aseity, which is self-creation, and information, which is pre-existent. And so the computer programmer puts that information into the machine. The machine has been wired so that it can process information and draw certain conclusions, but it's always a machine. When we come to the creation of the universe, everything always goes back to aseity. Always there must be something that is self-creating, and that is God himself. And then everything goes back to what is written in John 1. In the beginning was the Word, was information. And it is the information that causes this life that we understand truly as sentient human life. So the computer engineer is merely mimicking what God did in creating the entirety of the earth. We need to wake up to this and understand where all of this is going and reevaluate all of our values and our worldviews.
Well, computers are absolutely wonderful tools. How is it that they could possibly, you know, be viewed as getting out of hand, you know, like in the movie 2001, A Space Odyssey?
Well, if the computer is able to begin to make its own decisions about its own interests, like HAL did, the computer in 2001, his great fear was being turned off. The human being still had some measure of authority. But Hal had the authority over the human being because he could shut down all of the systems. So this movie was very prescient regarding the kinds of flow that is moving in our time. So my book was about the issue of transcendence. What is transcendent? What will we look to as transcendent? If we find that the machine produces the facility that we're looking for in the processing of information so we can go faster, we can calculate more, whatever the case, at some point, the machine can become transcendent in those processes and in those systems. And this is what concerns me greatly.
You know, it's so interesting when you think about it that modern man sometimes, you know, to add insult to injury, we can be so arrogant in terms of how much we know and how we look down on those who went before us as being ignorant and so forth. Certainly anybody that believes the Bible is an ignoramus and so forth. But listen to these words from the Bible, from John 1:1. You kind of alluded to them. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. Those are very profound words. I even heard the first part of what I just said quoted one time on CNN, just the very, very beginning, where it said, in the beginning was the Word. And it's like, whoa, this is really profound stuff. And this goes back to the first century AD because of, you know, the influence of Jesus.
Well, another thing that propelled this study is exactly in line with what you're talking about. There was a computer engineer at MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and he said, in effect, the universe is a quantum processor. It is a mighty quantum processor, which means that this information is what is being processed by the universe itself, which is the whole procedure and progress of life. For there to be information, there must be mind. And if there's mind, there must be intellect. And if there's intellect, there must be person. And so the computer is dependent on the human being. But if the human being reverses the process and makes himself or herself subservient to the machine, then we've lost the balance of that true transcendence. I'm concerned about this in churches, where the pulpit is strictly horizontal. It talks about me and my needs, but at some point, the pulpit has got to talk about the greatness of God and the accountability of all things to God, including the works of our hands.
Do you feel, in light of the fact that our cultural elites today discount God, or if they talk about God, it's only you, and here's a phrase from a liberal version of the Supreme Court, you know, let's say a couple generations ago, ceremonial deism. In other words, it really doesn't mean anything. Oh, well, if it doesn't mean anything, then why even talk about it? In other words, here America is one nation under God. Our Declaration of Independence said that our rights come from the Creator. The Founding Fathers, in fact, in the Declaration of Independence, referred to God four times. And this is very significant. But today, God is being discounted by the intellectual elites, and he has no place in the public arena. And some of those who are the cultural elites, they're computer programmers, and they're making computers that, you know, maybe they think they'll somehow supposedly replace God.
Well, and the inclusion of those words that you quoted in the opening lines of the Declaration of Independence meant that there is accountability. The founders understood that the transcendence of God, which was one of the themes, by the way, of the Great Awakenings, that they would have known fairly well, especially Benjamin Franklin, who was printing the sermons of John Whitfield. Nevertheless, that idea of accountability was crucial for a free society. Now, if we strip the concept of the transcendence of God, what then will be transcendent to the machine? And my question is, will the human being who denies transcendence have the ability to resist the twistings and the turnings of the machine that may make that human being feel like a false god and therefore fall in the trap of idolatry, which has happened across all generations?
Okay, we have about 2 minutes left to go. What would you like to see happen in an ideal sense to get this whole issue in control and to get back to humanizing humanity as opposed to this problem of dehumanization, which includes abortion?
I would love to see the church and the family understood that they are the prime players in this whole scenario, that they're the ones who can do something about this. Government will try to regulate it, but cannot do anything other than regulate it. But there must be a change of worldview where there's an understanding of the transcendence of God and the importance of even computer programmers yielding, giving themselves to that transcendent glory and majesty of God, and the kind of life that is contrasted to the machine, and protect that life no matter what.
As we go forward, if America embraces a culture of life as opposed to this whole big pro-abortion mentality, how would that change our view of humans and what we actually do? How would it change life?
We would understand the totality of the human being, that the human being is spirit, soul, and body, indwelt by the Holy Spirit, given a soul, a psuche, a psyche, to be able to process that information, and the body through which we act out what comes from the inside of us that's put there by God. The machine can only do what the machine is programmed to do, does not have that freedom even, unless there is a someone who programs into the machine a worldview and a morality that has some limits on what it can do.
Is America ripe for a revival, a national, you know, a great awakening? You referred earlier to George Whitefield.
I think very much that the issues of our time are in the process of producing the seed of that revival. So the seed is not gone into the ground, but the seed itself is being concocted, if you will, out of all the crisis that we're moving through. Crisis always precedes revival, and revival opens up things to the movement of God, the movement of the Holy Spirit on the culture. I quoted Benjamin Franklin. Even Franklin, who was accused of being a sheer deist, nevertheless was amazed at what he observed in Philadelphia and other cities as the outcropping of that wonderful revival. I believe we're being set up for that. That's the exciting and positive side of this.
Wow. Okay, Wallace Henley, author, thank you so much for being with us. All the best.
My pleasure, Jerry. Thank you.